Welcome to Vox. It's really good to see y'all this morning. It is my joy to introduce our speaker today. I think we've shared that we really value a diversity of voices and diversity of perspectives on how to open Scripture and invite us into how God might be speaking into our lives. So I get to introduce Matt today, who I've known for a few years now. Matt's a therapist. He also has a really wonderful podcast called Inefficiency, which I feel like is like an unspoken value of our community, actually, right? Like, we're awesome at not being efficient, and which, if you are efficient, it's not to say you don't belong. It's just say, like, we need you more. Would y'all welcome Matt up as he comes up? Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. It's always a little tighter than I think. Okay. So I'm going to open up with two questions, and I'm going to ask the question, and then you guys can kind of just think to it on your own, and I'll just give you a couple seconds for it. First question is, what is your reaction to being hurt by someone? Okay. And the second question is, what is your first reaction when you realize you have hurt someone? Okay. So two different. So just take a few seconds and kind of think about what your go-to is. So maybe some of you have encountered anger or some injustice on that first question, or maybe some sadness or some shame on the second question. Sometimes these are very different situations. And sometimes they're weirdly combined. We can be the offender and still somehow feel offended, right? And pain in that way is kind of a complicated matter. I remember the first time that I was in group therapy as a counseling student. The group was starting to become vulnerable, and it was leading to a lot of connection. But it was also leading to some conflict. And one person got mad at another person. And being a good peacemaker, I stepped in. And I was doing a really good job, everybody. Empathy, clarity. I was a light shining in the darkness. But for some weird reason, it wasn't taking. So I offered my wisdom a couple more times. And then the facilitator stepped in and called me out. And he asked the group something like, does anyone else feel or sense how uncomfortable Matt is right now? And I was like, wait, how are you going to turn the tables? Like, this guy's the problem, the anger one, right? And not me. And so I tried to justify myself a few times. And by about the second time, I started to hear the defensiveness in my voice. And I started to encounter how worked up I was internally. And I started to think, maybe there's some truth in my facilitator's words. Maybe he has just stabbed me with the sword of truth, which is an Ephesians 6 joke for anybody. There was this ego hurting realization that maybe some of my peacemaking was not healthy. And that although I was getting this amazing breakthrough, I also had to step back and realize that maybe I was stunting the breakthrough of other people at times. So sometimes we know that we're sinning, right? We are out for blood. But other times we are so ignorant to it, and it's not until the fallout that we start to realize that. And it's not necessarily always just who we violate or how we violate, but it's also, are we going to kind of circle back? Are we going to deny and defend, or are we going to find some grounding in love? So today we're going to be looking at Jeremiah, a heartbroken man who is trying to work through his pain. Our focus is on how he responds to the pain and how it's just one model for us as we're working through our own. So we're going to be looking at Lamentations 3, 22 through 33. It's from the Message version. So let's go ahead and read it out loud together. So when I told my wife that I was going to be giving a homily, she asked what the passage was about. And I told her that it was about God's loyal love and that his mercies are new each day. And because she knows my propensity to take everything deep and sometimes dark, she asked, "Oh, that's wonderful. So how are you going to turn this into a storm of sadness?" It feels really good to be known, everybody. But little did she know that the passage was going to be coming from Lamentations, right? Root word lament. And it's written by the prophet Jeremiah, who some call the weeping prophet. So I want to share just a few lines from this same chapter, but it's just the beginning of this chapter, just to let you kind of get a taste for the already embedded storm of sadness. Okay? So here's just a few lines. "He took me by the hand and walked me into pitch black darkness. He turned me into a scarecrow of skin and bones, and then he broke the bones. Even when I cry out and plead for help, he locks up my prayers and throws away the key. He's a prowling bear tracking me down. He's a lion ready to pounce. He took out his bow and arrows and used me for target practice. He forced rotten, stinking food down my throat, bloated me with vile drinks." Like, okay. That's pretty intense, right? Now, Jeremiah, and this is in the same chapter of everything you just read, by the way. Like, it's a total flip-flop. Now, Jeremiah was an eyewitness to the fall of Jerusalem in 586 BC. So he saw everything, his city, his temple, all go away. And so this isn't just like drama. This is probably more accurately trauma. But each chapter of Lamentations is actually an acrostic poem. So to contain all of this emotion in the form of poetry is pretty amazing. And I've been trained to take all of this very literally and very academically. So I had to kind of catch myself just having to pull away and to remind myself that this is actually art. And one commentary said, this is art in the service of emotional release, which I think is really cool. So throughout the whole collection of poems, he's feeling his feelings, as we like to say in my family. Grieving the destruction of his city and seeing it as punishment from God. He experienced so many terrible things, but here he's starting to remember one thing that gives him hope. So let's take a look at that. He says, God's loyal love couldn't have run out. His merciful love couldn't have dried up. They're created new each morning. How great your faithfulness. I'm sticking with God, and I say it over and over. He's all I've got left. So this whole time, he has been dogging on God in an attempt to feel his pain, which is something we all do to one another. When we are emotionally hurt, when we are at the end of our ropes, life and love start to begin to feel scarce. We see love as a limited commodity. It's almost like we've been given 10 quarts of it or something, right? And once it's gone forever. But it's as if he's remembering just how big God's love is, and the idea that his pain outpacing God's love and care isn't really making a lot of sense anymore. Now, granted, this is not his first reaction. Like, we can kind of point back to like the scarecrow thing. But he's beginning to circle back to this idea. And I love the language that God's love is, it won't run out. It won't dry up. The reality that the love of God is not static, but dynamic, waiting to be co-created between any to people. And that it's not limited, but it's continually growing. And acknowledging this growth, Jude, who wrote the letter called Jude, he begins his letter saying, "May mercy and peace and love be multiplied to you." Now, you can't force this on hurting people. They will slap you. But it's a thing of beauty when those who are hurting run headfirst into these old or new realizations for themselves. My wife, Erin, lost her mom to a brain aneurysm when Erin was 14. And her and I did an emotional podcast interview a few years ago, and we talked about her long-term grief. And one of the more beautiful moments was when she talked about the guilt within her grief starting to turn. Like most 14-year-olds, Erin has some distinct memories of being unreasonably moody with their mother, even rejecting an embrace right before her tragic death. And some of those moments have haunted her when she thinks back to how her mom must have felt. But as we had our first child, Ira, something shifted. Erin encountered the dramatic, full love that she had for Ira. When he smiled, when he cried, when he spit up and into her mouth. Everything. It was then that Erin started to come into this type of realization or remembering that there was no rejection of a hug that could pull her mother's love away. No matter the temporary conflict, it didn't truly threaten the undeniable, secure bond. But when we aren't knee-deep in these realizations, we are what the church calendar calls in normal time, or we could edit that to mundane time, where we get wrapped up into the basic rhythms of living. We start to lump days together, right? Like Mondays are always just like all the other Mondays. And when life narrows in even more, we can start lumping people in together, and we put the in front of every group of people, right? The Jews, the blacks, the Mexicans, the whites. And in no time, whether it's in our pain or in the mundane, we stop leaving room for new. And going back to the text, in referring to God's love and mercy, Jeremiah says that we are created new each morning, these mercies. Now, I know this is poetry, and I know I'm not a literalist, but I find myself really wanting this to be literal because it's just such a beautiful line of poetry. And it makes me think of another poem by Linda Paston, who I'm trying to get into the Inefficiency magazine, and I'd like to share it with you. It's called Imaginary Conversations. "You tell me to live each day as if it were my last. This is in the kitchen where before coffee, I complain of the day ahead. That obstacle race of minutes and hours, grocery stores and doctors. But why the last, I ask? Why not live each day as if it were the first? All raw astonishment. Eve rubbing her eyes that first morning, the sun coming up like an ingenue in the east. You grind the coffee with the small roar of a mind trying to clear itself. I set the table, glance out the window where dew has baptized every living surface." And so for a spiritual practice, I want us to be able to maybe try curious listening. Listening with the intent to learn something new. The listening could be with a person, in silence, or in a sunrise. It's paying attention with the reality that maybe we're caught up that we have something to learn, something to see, something to remember. Let's go back to the text. In verse 28, he says, when life is heavy and hard to take, go off by yourself. Enter the silence, bow in prayer, don't ask the questions, wait for hope to appear. Don't run from trouble, take it full face. The worst is never the worst. So we often pit strength and humility against each other. And I think it can be a wonderful and very interesting mix here. In humility, Jeremiah talks about solitude, bowing in reverence, not asking questions, entering silence, and waiting. And yet he also says, like when we normally do that stuff, a lot of times we're running from something. But he says, also don't run from this trouble. Take it full face. Square up to it. And this is an exceptional amount of fortitude here. To be able to hold something back, to reserve something, but in the same time move forward or toward something. And Brené Brown states that hope is a function of struggle. That when we systematically dodge the pains and disappointments of life, one feature that emerges is hopelessness. She says that it's not about us trying to avoid pain, but it's about us tending to the shame and the isolation that come from it. And I think this is a really important insight. Without struggle, we will struggle to have hope. Without struggle, we will struggle to find strength. So I wanted to share a clip with you from the You Made It Weird podcast with comedian Pete Holmes. Does anybody listen to this? Okay. So he was talking with Mark Paul Gosselaar, a.k.a. Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell. I'm sure he would like that intro. It's something he did like 30 years ago. But they were finding commonality about marrying really young and marrying what they called mommy wives, like where it was just they went from their family of origin straight into marriage. And then the subsequent pain of divorce. And so this clip picks up as they are talking about their pain. So have a listen.
What I want to know is your experience. Did you feel liberated? Did you feel blindsided? Did you eat a lot of Chinese food in the dark?
No, I did the exact opposite. I was blindsided, and what happened was, I cleaned myself up. Yes. I basically lived like a monk.
Yes.
For a while. I lived in this loft, which was my like little sanctuary. I cleaned up my diet. I wouldn't drink caffeine. I wouldn't drink alcohol. I wasn't smoking. I wanted to feel the pain. It was really cliche, but I wanted to know pain.
You let it in.
I wanted to let it in, but I wanted to know where the pain was coming from. I didn't want to dilute it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, I just wanted to feel.
Therapy?
And so, I went through a lot of therapy.
Looking at it in the face. See, that's doing the work.
I said, I have to do this because I'm not going to turn. Because I kept my head in the sand for 17 years.
Well, this is why you have this fantastic wife now, because you're doing the work.
I couldn't appreciate the woman that I have now.
Yes.
You can't appreciate someone like that until you realize what it is. I mean,
that's right.
Are you on? Is the audience going to dig what we're talking about, or is this like a
1,000%? No, this is what the show is.
Okay,
it's not a comedy show.
Okay, yeah. This isn't really funny at all.
No, but, we stopped trying to be funny.
Okay,
a long time.
But no, as I just went into this attitude of I'm going to feel this. I'm going to know what this feels like, so that when I meet the right person, I'm going to know what love is.
That's what it is.
I'm going to know when I meet that person. I'm not going to second guess it.
Buddy.
It's just going to hit me, and I'm going to know what it is.
And don't take that as a given. What I mean is I know people that get divorced from their mommy wives.
Sure.
And from my circle, the religious circle, you see it a lot. Okay. Yeah. And a lot of them, it's like getting hit in football and they just roll and keep running in the same direction.
I know.
With the new one. I'm celebrating the idea that you got this payload of grief and you signed for it, and you soberly dealt with it, I'm getting Dr. Phil, but that's character. That's what brings you perspective.
I love some of those lines. Doing the work. Signing for it. Like signing for that payload, that it's almost that sense of consenting to what is in our lives. And the Message version says, take it. It being the pain, the discipline, the consequences. Take it full face, square up to it. Know that it's coming like a wave. Not suppressing our pain not only helps us now, but it has a positive impact for us down the road, producing insight, wisdom, and correction. When we suppress as our tendency, it's always going to be coming out sideways at some point. Now, I do want to say this, though. Some of us have tendencies to avoid pain. And this idea of full face is an invitation to move into our pain, trusting that God will meet us there and that there is some health and healing and love in it. Some of us, though, we camp out in our pain, right? We swim in it. We bathe in it. We're just always in it. And we could kind of take this reading and kind of clobber ourselves with it. And like, I should be doing more. I should just like not go to work. And like, and I'm just going to like focus on this tomorrow. And some of us, like, we need breaks. Like, we need a trip. We need a good book. We need a laugh. And it's allowing us to be able to sustain the work. So as a spiritual practice, maybe in the next week or two, is to find an activity that will encourage you to either start the work or to help you take a break in order to sustain the work. This could be solitude. It could be silence. It could be contemplative prayer, something I forget about. It could be writing exercises. It could be listening to stand-up comedy. But Jeremiah says that we can face this work because God won't ever walk out or fail to return. If he works severely, he also works tenderly. And what sticks out to me is that God works in many different ways. He can make our hearts flutter, and it can also be open heart surgery. Last week, we had the privilege of listening and hearing from Pamela talk about the contemplative life, about consenting to our own goodness. She used the words from Father Greg Boyle on faithfulness, saying, faithfulness is being anchored in love, sustained or tethered to a sustaining God, and not the least bit shaky in our own unshakable goodness. Her question to us was, being made by capital G goodness, am I good? And in this text, particularly if you look at the context, it is easy to ask, is God really good? But as this text sat with me over the past few weeks, a new question has emerged that was down a few layers, which is, do I belong? So let me share with you how I got to that question, because it doesn't necessarily just jump off of the page. So during these readings, my mind went to Jean Vanier. He was a professor of philosophy at Toronto University back in the 50s. And he took a summer in France and spent some time with a priest and a community of people with different levels of ability. He was so taken by his experience that he left his post at the school and he never returned. He created a community called L'Arche. And for the past 50 years, he's been living among people with varying abilities. And he said from the very beginning that they didn't want his money and that they didn't want his information, two things that everyone else wanted from him. But what they wanted was his friendship. And that while they weren't going to be doing quote unquote big things in their life, they had a message for him and for us to be able to slow down and to listen and to find a unity within all of our fragility. He talked about the importance of those working at L'Arche to stay, to be consistent, and to keep coming back. He stated that we tend toward placelessness as a culture. Ouch. Like, that was a dagger in my heart when I first read that, because as an adult, I've moved everywhere and I don't always have a sense of place or a sense of home. And in the L'Arche context, so many have felt the pain of being left, being unwanted, thrown away by a society because of their deficiencies, and more aptly, their inability to participate in a transactional, efficient love. He saw that they needed to be grounded in relationship and that he needed the same grounding. This loyal love could make everyone feel human and help them bump into their own unshakable goodness. We are all looking for this kind of loyal love, for a place to circle back and to belong. Jean Vanier says that belonging is for becoming. Our pain and experiences change us, but because we have a capital L love that continues to return, we are invited to return, changed over and over again. And I love the Eugene Peterson's interpretation here of stockpiles. He says his stockpiles of loyal love are immense. When I hear stockpile, I think of ammunition or weapons, right? And so when he throws in this idea of love, it really starts to mess with my mind. And here Jeremiah is coming back to an anchor point, a love to which he is tethered. This love doesn't shy away from pain or struggle, but it also doesn't create the kinds of shaming and demeaning and exploiting. That love is far more immense than any of our own versions, and we would do good to differentiate God from ourselves in this way. So whether you are hurting or you have hurt others, we can circle back and we can follow in the pattern of the Holy Trinity, always in dialogue, always active, always making room and making new. And so for a spiritual practice, it's just to be reminded, to spend some time with a friend or a community that accepts and embraces you as is. And then maybe to spend some time afterward writing, recording some thoughts and some feelings about your experience and trying to connect them to God's loyal love for you. So we all fight through what some version of what Jeremiah is going through. Loss and grief and trying to figure out where God plays into all of this. Trying to not fall into the extremes, but at the same time having some tangible place to land. Consenting to not only the hardships, but consenting to God's loyal love in it. Remembering it is here for us and that we belong. Let's pray. God, I am thankful for this new morning, complete with new obstacles and new mercies. I'm thankful to you for this community, for those who gain a sense of belonging that is akin to and connected to what you give us. As well as I pray for those on the edges who don't feel that sense of belonging yet. May our hearts expand to include, to bring in the new as you show us over and over and over again. May we not only consent to our pain, but also consent to you, to your goodness, to our goodness, and to your faithfulness that not only keeps coming back to us over and over, but keeps us coming back to grounding in love. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.